Information to grow the brain.
CKUT
Radio.
Radio.
Sound waves in the air.
CKUT.
Help. You're there. When your kids say something's wrong, you're there. When your friends have a rough day, you're there. Be there for yourself the way you're there for others, as it's normal for these uncertain times to bring out negative emotions or anxiety. If you're finding it difficult to carry out daily tasks, there are solutions. Visit quebec.ca/gettingbetter or call Info Sociale 811. A message from the Gouvernement du Québec.
This message is intended for all Quebecers. We must take extreme measures to curb the pandemic. Only essential services remain open. Gatherings are prohibited. It's forbidden to leave your home between 8 p.m. and 5 a.m. These efforts aim to protect our healthcare workers, seniors, and loved ones. Let's comply with the lockdown and curfew to lower the risk of contracting COVID-19, because our health is important. For more information, visit quebec.ca/confinement. A message from the Gouvernement du Québec.
Are you a queer artist or activist in the Montreal area who wants a platform to discuss your work? Interested in producing radio for QueerCore on CKUT? Send an email to queercoreradio@ckut.ca. That's queercoreradio@ckut.ca. Welcome to the January 18th, 2021 edition of QueerCore on CKUT 90.3 FM. It's 6:04 p.m. On today's show, we're broadcasting an episode of the Out of Context with Caitlin Hartland podcast entitled Decolonizing Queer Canada. Caitlin sits down with Vi Jones, a visual artist and drag performer who currently resides in Halifax, but grew up in a First Nations community in southern Ontario. Vi is Anishinaabe, non-binary, two-spirit, and a student of fine arts who uses various artistic platforms to illustrate their views and educate the audience. Vi speaks about colonization from the perspective of a queer, two-spirit indigenous person, how reconciliation is perhaps a settler concept that never actually considers more than the assimilation of indigenous people, and how drag is an art form where people can disrupt the colonization process through the repatriation of voices and space for indigenous performers. As a content note, this podcast contains some coarse language.
This is Out of Context with Caitlin Hartlin.
Indeed, I am Caitlin Hartlin, your host of Out of Context, and I've got a nice warm beverage as per usual. I'm going to take a little sip right now because it's nice and fresh and hot. By the way, Tetley, if you're listening, I am still open to a sponsorship. And I say this about every episode, but it's always true. I'm excited to have my guest here. This is someone I haven't had a chance to speak with in quite some time and haven't seen in person for years, Vi Jones. And they are a drag performer in Halifax who also dabbles in many other art forms and is all around a great person. They are non-binary and they are also two-spirit, and they are originally from Garden River First Nation here in Ontario. And I think I've said enough about Vi. They can speak for themselves now. Hi, Vi.
Hi, Vi. Oh, shit, that's me.
And we're off to a great start. I promise, Hi. Vi is very intelligent, and that's why I wanted to have them on the podcast.
Yes, I speak well, and I do the thing that's smart, and I like books.
You're so good at all of it.
Yeah, and I speak goodly, too. Mm.
It's... honestly blows my mind every time we speak. But the reason I wanted to have Vi on the podcast was because they recently did a live stream of their makeup on Instagram, and they were talking about decolonization. And I thought, yes, what a great way to intersect some of the things I'm passionate about on the podcast, because people might be thinking, decolonization, queer podcast, how do those things go together? Well, you're going to find out if you listen to the rest of this episode, and we do hope you stick with us. So first, I want to give a little background on Vi and how we met, because that was through the wonderful world of drag in Halifax. So Vi was actually our unofficial but official photographer at the time for our weekly show, Get Your Drag On, at Men's and Molly's Bar in the North End. And also, apologies in advance if you can hear some scratching in the background. My cat is trying her hardest to break in here, but it's not going to happen. Sorry, Nat the cat.
Right outside my door is my two cats just like screaming.
Okay, so we're on the same page then.
We're on the same page. They're not scratching. They do this thing where it's like, let me sing you the song of my people.
That's our other cat, Minnie. She loves to use her vocal cords. Nat is just like, I'm going to keep scratching until you either yell at me or let me in. And yeah, basically nothing will stop her. She is relentless.
This entire episode is about our cats.
Yeah. Fooled you. You thought it was going to be deep. Just kidding.
Let me tell you about my cats, Tara and Locke. No.
There is a third cat, Ash, and he is mostly well-behaved, but it's more so that he's just so cute, he gets away with everything.
I feel like that's Tara. Tara's just, like, really well-behaved, but that's because she doesn't care about anything. And she's just like, let me sleep and feed me.
I aspire to be that. If there's a way I can work it out in my professional life, I'll do it.
Like, just to be fed and...
Yeah, just
done.
Have my needs taken care of and contribute nothing.
Dreams.
So, yes, we met through drag, and Vi has continued to do drag because they are still in a city where that is more possible to do. Although throughout the pandemic, I know that's probably looked a little different for you. But we wanted to talk about decolonization because Vi was actually one of the first people who introduced that concept to me. I don't know if you were aware of that, but it was through a performance that you did when I still lived in Halifax. And I have this vague memory of you having written decolonize or something like that on some fabric. I don't remember if it was over your mouth or your eyes or how you had it. I just remember it being a part of
waist.
Your waist?
Yeah.
I was way off. Okay.
No, it was a reveal. It was tied around my waist, and then I brought it up and brought it in front of my eyes.
Okay, so I had it half right.
Part of the memory was there was that it was drama.
Right. So throughout the episode, we're going to talk about decolonization, but we're also going to talk about how it can be applied in a queer context. So Vi, if you wouldn't mind taking the lead and defining decolonization for us, or colonization first, if you think that's an easier place to start.
Starting with colonization. So we are located here in Canada, and Canada has a historically colonial past. It is freshly over 150 and some years old. And what does colonization mean? Colonization means that there was a wealth of millions of people living in these lands sustainably before European settlers arrived. And then they fucked it up, as any history book will not tell you.
Unfortunately. But that's why we're here.
Yeah, and so within the Canadian context, and where I approach sort of my learning from, so I'm an artist by trade. I drag is one of the ways in which I engage my art, but I also produce visual art. But I really love the way drag sort of lives and breathes in spaces where art is not necessarily considered high art or where art is looked down upon, because I really love that. I really love throwing what art can be on its head. And if my art can't be owned by galleries, it's my favorite kind of art. And so Jennifer is one of my favorite kind of art. And it's science fiction. It's the opportunity to dream. Jennifer is the opportunity to bring those fantasies into reality. So when I talk about decolonization and what Jennifer is for me, we're talking about just what it means to live authentically ourselves, what it means to be true to ourselves, live with the good way that we know how. But I wanted to speak to in the queer scene here in Halifax is that there was a lot of white people. I was the only Indigenous performer here for a long time.
Yeah, which is crazy.
Luckily, not
about
the case now.
Yeah.
And so when I started performing, I was really aware of that because I come from reserve and I moved to Halifax where everybody gets a little bit whiter. And so when I'm talking about decolonization, just to bring it back, we're talking about the colonial history of Canada, that colonization itself was not just like people showing up and saying, hey, we live here now, that this is a process, that this is a process of genocide.
It wasn't that neat and tidy by any means.
And it's a process of genocide. And how that means is it's cultural genocide. So the entire purpose is to exterminate Indigenous people. John A. MacDonald would say it most famously, kill the Indian, save the child. And that was the purpose behind the residential school program, which saw thousands of children would never make it home from. They would be abused sexually, physically. There's a lot of history and a lot of trauma that happened at residential school. And if you don't know a lot about it, I really suggest you check out the Truth and Reconciliation Commission. They've done a lot of work on it, and Google is your best friend, especially because residential schools in Canada, the last one closed in 1996, so I was 7 years old.
Yeah, that is
like, this is not a long time ago. This is my lifetime.
Yeah, and I didn't learn about it until I was in my late 20s. It just wasn't covered in school. It is now, from what I understand, because my brother's a teacher in Alberta, and he said that it's part of the curriculum now. But I don't know how long ago it was introduced, but certainly not soon enough.
Well, and then we look at the systems sort of that were driven, or the systems in place that were implemented to exterminate Indigenous people culturally. So A, there was the residential school system where people were not allowed to communicate in their language. You're removing children from their families. They're being removed from their parents. They're being moved. If there is a residential school nearby, they're generally being moved much further away so that they don't have those ties, the connection to community, to that upbringing, for that knowledge transmission, for that cultural transmission to take place. So all of these children are now growing up alienated from their own places in these horribly abusive institutions that I don't even want to tell you what trauma can do to you. I feel like some people already know.
Yeah.
And then kids died at school, but also there's a huge chunk of kids that didn't. And those are kids that went back to their families, and their families didn't know who they were.
Yeah, and they didn't know how to communicate with their families because their language had been stripped from them.
Had been beaten from them, absolutely. Yeah. And every aspect of sort of that indigenous way of life, that well-being that they were raised into this world until the Indian Age, because there was people that enforced this on reserves, shipped you off to school, that would be a major upheaval for anybody, but for a child. And then this happened for generations. So there was a point where, like, your grandfather went to residential school, your father went to residential school, and you knew that you would be going to. So language is one of the tools of colonization. Being able to purchase land is a tool of colonization. Indigenous people cannot own property for the longest time. Pushed the reserve systems. There was bounties on Mi'kmaq scalps being sold by Cornwallis here in Halifax. And there was just, yeah, there was a lot. And so all of these different notions contributed sort of to the cultural genocide. But Indigenous people, as we are resilient, are strong, are beautiful, and we're still here despite all of this.
And if I may say, very funny.
Very funny. Well, some of us. It's the trauma. Oh. No, humor is a part of it. Humor is,
It's a coping mechanism. It absolutely is.
It's more than just a coping mechanism. It's an access point. Mm. It's a way to let our guards down. It's a way for us to engage with each other. But when I talk about decolonization in an academic sense, because like I said, I am an artist. I'm currently going to school. I am a master's student at NASCAD who's studying art education, ideally in the stream of community practice. And so that has informed my academic upbringing. And when I bring up decolonization, I'm specifically looking at the way it exists in that academic sense. So it's not necessarily a way for us to sort of make safer spaces. It's not for us to engage in a way that is tokenistic. When we're talking about decolonization, we're not talking about Indigenous consultation or opening ceremonies or land acknowledgements. Those are not what we're talking about. Decolonization from Kay Yang and Eve Tuck. I reference this essay a lot. It's called Decolonization is Not a Metaphor.
Okay.
And that it's about the repatriation of Indigenous land and life, and that is essential for Indigenous people to thrive going forward. And not only for Indigenous people, but for everybody on Turtle Island, which is conceptually North America.
So is that quite literally to mean taking the land back that was initially stolen? Yeah. Okay.
But that exists in a different way, right? Because Indigenous methods of land ownership are different than settler methods of land ownership. So when we're talking about land back, we're not actually talking about the way that land is necessarily owned currently, but the way that land is sort of stewarded and maintained, that settlers are guests on this land, and what sort of privilege comes with being a guest, what sort of rights come with being a guest, what sort of ways are you relating to the nation in which you're living when you're considered a guest in your own home?
So all of the stuff that wasn't considered initially by the colonizers.
Not initially, yeah. but that we would put the land, the agency of the land ahead of humanity, that it doesn't necessarily consider the future of settler society. Decolonization does not consider the future of settlers. There is a place in decolonial society for settlers. We do, obviously, it's... Pardon?
But they aren't the main focus.
But they aren't the main focus.
The end game.
Well, and they're not even considered a focus. It's about repatriation of Indigenous land and life. And what does that mean? That means including sexuality. Sexuality is supremely fluid and Indigenous, and it's sovereign and it's great.
It actually brings me to something I wanted to ask you about, because we do want to link the idea of decolonization to what it could mean in queer spaces, particularly in Canada. So could you maybe talk a little bit about your experience as someone who was raised in a First Nations community? You are Two-Spirit yourself, and you've since moved out of the province and to a whole other community, much larger. Like Halifax is quite, it's a city. So how has that kind of...
Everybody here will tell you that it's small.
Yeah. For a city, it's small, yes.
Yeah.
But compared to a small community, it's large. So being both queer and Indigenous and growing up in a colonist society, like, how has that kind of experience colored your view of the world and of Canada?
Well, I've never really considered myself Canadian, because the social nation state of Canada has never really entered into diplomatic relations with Indigenous people. And so I think as a child, I had this conceptualization that we're all Canadian. And then as an adult, I was like, oh no, we're not.
Yeah.
I think for me, I grew up in a place that was really affected by colonization. And as a result, we didn't have a lot of our teachings about Two-Spirit people. So I didn't have a lot of access to the knowledge that I do now. As a result, a lot of my upbringing was pretty, I want to say, closeted. I was a lot easier to be Indigenous back home than it was to be queer. The effects of colonization and the way it sort of continues, because it's not a process that has happened once, it's ongoing, it continues, and it breeds itself.
Yeah.
And that includes in Indigenous communities. That's through the ways that we continue to marginalize the most vulnerable members of our society instead of protecting them. And that means that, yeah, I've faced a lot of homophobia on reserve, a lot of really shitty experiences, but that were never racially charged.
That's interesting. So
kind of it was a lot
where
easier.
You go, there's going to be discrimination from one corner or another.
Yeah, that's why there's no such thing as a safe space. That's why I don't believe in safe spaces. There's only ever like safer spaces, because the minute we add any other experience to another, we're going to make that space unsafe for someone.
That's a really interesting perspective. I hadn't considered it that way before. Oh, damn. This is why I wanted to do
this episode, because I knew that I had a lot to learn, and I knew that you would be someone that would kind of bear all and you wouldn't hold back. So I am, yeah, I'm eager to get more into your brain.
I'm also super blunt and I just say what I want.
And that's what I love about you. I knew you weren't going
to
be a guest
that I would have to prod to get to talk.
No, you're going to have a hard time getting me to shut up.
That's okay. We've still got like a good
half hour on the Zoom call. This is my first time doing it over Zoom, by the way, for anyone listening. So apologies if the quality is not up to snuff for my previous episodes, but I am working with what I got.
Having time. Everybody's trying their best. Everybody's improvising. I mean, we are
trying our best.
If you look in the camera right now, you can see, like, I don't know if this is going to be in video, but I've currently converted my basement, featuring heat blankets, a series of reflective curtains, into a tiny indoor gay bar with just me.
Yeah, it looks pretty awesome, to be honest with you.
It's certainly a bit more sophisticated than my current setup, which is an empty room with a patio chair and an end table with my laptop on it.
Well, the joy about sewing all of my own costumes is I have access to a lot of fabric that I haven't done anything with.
True. So is that just leftover fabric
from something you made? Nice.
I didn't make anything. This is all just like fabric that was sitting in the pile thinking, I could make a gown out of this.
It does look very kind of futuristic and like spacey.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, I was excited. I was thinking about gluing mirrors all over it, maybe. I don't know.
Sorry, listeners, you can't
see it, but picture like a kind of silvery sheet, and it's all hanging and falling very nicely.
And there's a fringe curtain in front of it to add some texture.
Wow, fancy.
Because I'm that kind of gay.
You're many kinds of gay, from what I understand.
Yeah, angry ones too.
Speaking of, did you want to talk a little bit about how you have used drag as an outlet for
A lot of the frustrations that you have around colonization and those sorts of issues?
Yeah, I mean, so...
Well, first tell us your name.
Your drag name.
Okay. My drag name is Jennifer DeFuck, which a lot of people have had a problem with this and I've had to explain it a few times. It is a pun.
Yes.
Yes, it's gender fuck. Jennifer DeFuck.
If you shorten it to Jen,
it immediately becomes obvious.
Yeah, but I want people to work for it because I'm not here to provide free labor.
And that is very fitting
for Jennifer as a character as well.
I also love to engage people in emotional labor in relaxing spaces. So yeah, that's the way I started doing political drag. I've noticed when I was photographing all of these things, I started going to drag events and started going to the gay bar and photographing all of these places. And there was all these amazing, beautiful drag kings that seduced me just by looking at me. And I was
Am I counted among them? Because I'm like...
I swooned so hard for every person that was there, except for Felix Static, who is the only person I swoon for these days.
That's fair. I mean, who
doesn't swoon for Felix Static? Good God.
Yeah.
He called me a hunk on stage one time and I almost died. Like, I was just a puddle backstage.
Right. He once put a Band-Aid on my bleeding leg. Oof. That's it. That's, and that was the highlight of my night.
He gave me a shot of whiskey after I dislocated my shoulder, and I felt pretty badass about that.
I have a picture of you dislocating your shoulder.
Oh God, I haven't seen that.
I haven't seen a lot of your photos, actually.
No, I've put a lot of them away because a lot has changed.
It's from a different era.
I mean, it feels like a different life.
Actually, the background of my
laptop is a photo from Prido Guido.
Oh my goodness.
And we are standing next to each other in it, actually. I was looking at it when I was opening my laptop earlier, and I was just like, oh, there's me and Vi right in the middle. It's precious. But yeah, so sorry, back to drag and how political it can get for you.
Yeah. So when I started doing drag, I started noticing that there was a lot of white queens getting a lot of bookings. Mm-hmm. And that there was not a lot of kings getting bookings, and there was not a lot of people of color getting bookings, and there was constantly having these shows with just white cast performers, and I hated it.
Yeah.
Hate, because there was no people of color in these shows, but we have such an amazing slew of talented performers in this city that deserve that stage, and they weren't getting it. And so I wanted to confront people with that in the most direct way I knew how. And it was really fortuitous at this point because it was the year of Canada 150 and it was my first genderfuck show. It was the first time I had been invited to perform with all of these drag performers that I had fallen so madly in love with. The genderfuck show had a piece of my heart like nothing else because it was just for trans and non-binary folk.
Yeah.
And it was in that space that we could defy the expectations of drag, that it didn't necessarily have to be gender illusion, that it could be gender as performance in whichever way you experience or don't experience it.
Yeah. And I
always found it way more interesting because you could kind of expect a certain type of number at those other less diverse shows and you would see it four times in a night, basically. Might be a different song, but it was essentially the same performance.
Death drop. I'm going to see somebody swinging their wig around.
Yeah. And I mean, I was totally guilty
of having a trope myself. Like, it was pretty rare that I didn't take my pants off. So,
but also, like, that's fun. I'm not going to hate on people for doing that. That's amazing. Like, I can't do a death drop. I just drop dead.
Yeah, I would not get back up after one, for sure.
I don't wear wigs. I own them, but I don't wear them. And I can't do a high kick. I can't kick higher than, like, my waist. And that's just, like, high enough to get somebody away from me, and that's all I need.
A solid tool to have.
My number one drag is just, like, I point to one side of the stage, and I cry while I walk towards it. And then it's dramatic political drag.
So yeah, you pigeonholed yourself in a different way.
Yeah. But I really wanted to confront people sort of with this expectation to show that, like, don't you realize what we're doing? That every performer who gets this, like you're saying, the thing that made me the most upset was all of the excuses as why they weren't hiring performers of color, saying that they weren't good enough or that there wasn't enough of us.
Wow.
That these performers were like baby performers, that they needed to have at least people with experience. And how are you going to get experience when you're not hiring them? Like, if we're hiring the same four queens to do all 12 shows, like four shows a month, how are these performers of color ever going to get on stage?
Yeah, like having a name on the bill to draw people in is important, but you don't have to stack every show with just those names. Like, you can open it up to other people. That's what our show was kind of about, was anybody could have the stage. Not everyone wanted to do it, but the stage was open if people wanted it.
Anything was drag.
Yeah.
As it should be, because drag, again, as gender performance, which is the way I've always believed it is it can be gorgeous, glamour, sequins, gowns, high hair. It can also be absolutely disgusting.
Yeah.
It can be incredibly subtle and personal. It can be drag when you wake up in the morning feeling like the gender you are and you have to put on something else so that people won't look at you. That can be drag.
Mm. I'm sorry. I keep forgetting that our listeners aren't going to be able to see me and I'm just like reacting with my face. I'm just like, yeah, Vi. Yeah, that's right.
And like, and that doesn't necessarily need to be performative drag, but it's generally the way that we experience gender and the way that we perform gender. And it's taking from all of those experiences and putting that emotional story up on stage, saying that this is my life, this is who I am, and I will not be ashamed.
Damn right. So getting back to decolonization in a queer context a little bit, what would you like to see in our society in the future? Like, what barriers do you think currently exist to reconciliation, and how are we going to break them down? I know that's a huge thing to get into, but if you want to just talk about it generally.
Well, I'd like to talk about the concept of reconciliation.
Okay.
If that's cool. And this may be a little bit controversial.
Absolutely.
It may be a little bit saucy, but I believe that reconciliation is a settler concept.
Ooh, okay. Can you explain why?
Well, first is the word reconciliation. Behind reconciliation, in order to have that, you have to have conciliation, which is an agreement made in good trust on both parts. And that has not happened.
True.
In the long history of these lands, any treaty that has been signed has not been maintained.
It's been reneged on in many cases.
In every case.
Yeah.
And then we look at the ways and the histories of, again, residential school, but also the ways that the Inuit disc system, which is, if you don't know it, you should Google how they had to wear numbered discs as part of identification, and they were relocated to towns. Indigenous people relocated from the ways that they're currently living off the land in an ethical, sustainable way to small communities where now they can't hunt, they can't fish. Those hunting and fishing rights, which we are still fighting for in Nova Scotia.
As evidenced, yeah, by the Clearwater fiasco recently.
So we have hunting and fishing rights that people can't access, which makes them require money, makes them dependent on the systems that put them there in the first place, because now the only thing between you and food is not necessarily the skills you have, but it's this piece of paper that tells you that this is worth money. And so now you have to be indebted to that instead of all of these skills that you've put yourself towards, that you've grown up knowing you...
That's so wrong.
Within that, I think that on Canada's part, there has never been any motion in good faith to have a working relationship with Indigenous people.
No, I would agree with that. And a lot of the times that efforts have been made, it's kind of been in name only, and it's a gesture for them to feel better about the past atrocities, more so than it is any real aim towards actual reconciliation.
Mm-hmm. And then when we look at what reconciliation would mean, and who's asking for reconciliation? And so is reconciliation what we're asking for so that we don't have to hear uncomfortable the subject is anymore?
Mm.
Because we've been in Canada for 150 years, but Columbus landed in 1492, and we have 500 years of colonial history, which is a lot more than Canada's been a nation, that we have to talk about. But reconciliation is a settler concept. So who at this point wants reconciliation? What is the purpose behind it? What goals will it accomplish?
Are you asking me?
I'm asking in general. Is the purpose of reconciliation so that Indigenous peoples will be able to live our lives in sovereignty, to live our lives with our language, with our culture, so that we can revive the way, the things we have lost, and live the ways we know how? Or is there a place for Indigenous people in a reconciled society? Are we expected to just assimilate?
Mm. Yeah, that's a valid point. Because I think any of the talks that have been had, and even the Truth and Reconciliation Commission itself, is still looking at things through a settler lens. And I am usually always of the mind that the person who is being oppressed should have the final say in how that wrong is corrected. So
we haven't had any say.
And so how would we get there? What do you think needs to be done?
There's a long, we didn't get here in a day.
No.
We got here, like I said, over 500 years, and we're not going to sort of solve this problem overnight.
Yeah, it might not happen in our lifetimes.
No. But I think, the ways that we can do this outside of governmental structures, because there is a very real way that this can be done within our leadership and within the values that our leadership upholds and how we keep them accountable on a local and national level, on a personal level, it means decolonizing our thought process. That means being aware of the limits that colonization places on our thought process. And it's really hard work. It's not easy work. And I don't mean that it's going to be hard to find out. I mean, it's going to suck.
Yeah, and it'll be uncomfortable.
It'll be incredibly uncomfortable. It'll be super jarring emotionally, but do it anyway.
Yeah, and it blows my mind that there are people of the mindset like, well, it's been, like you say, hundreds of years, just get over it. It's like, well, no. If your hockey team lost, you wouldn't get over that. And this is a far bigger and more damaging thing than that. So, like, how can you, like, just the audacity of saying something like that when the person saying it is likely still benefiting from those hundreds of years of colonization because they now have all of these privileges as a result.
What are you specifically asking me to get over? Are you asking me to get over your whiteness? Are you asking me to get over the fact that people treat me differently because I'm Indigenous? Are you asking me to get over residential schools? Are you asking me to get over the 60s scoop, the millennial scoop, the Trail of Tears? What do you want me to get over? There's a lot of history.
The list goes on.
That's not been addressed.
Yeah. And glossing over it is certainly not going to get anyone anywhere.
No, because this had a very real impact. Like I said, there was millions of people here before European settlers arrived. 90% of Indigenous people were wiped out. Sorry, 95.
Well, I was reading just this week about a young man in, I think it was Saskatchewan somewhere, who was taken on a starlight tour by the RCMP. In the year 2020, this is still happening.
When the pandemic started, and this is something that makes me terrified on a very real level, as somebody who lives with mental illness, there was two opportunities where police were called on a wellness check, which is what happens when you live with mental illness, where police come to your house and they generally just try to find out if you're okay and make sure that you're not a harm to yourself or anybody else and meet the needs sort of that you were experiencing. Two Indigenous people were killed by police, one in New Brunswick. Oh, both in New Brunswick. And so, like, on a different level, now I have to worry about my mental health, my sexuality, and my Indigeneity, because that's now three reasons for me to be killed just for breathing.
And it's not like you can take those off like a jacket.
No, but drag lets me do that.
Mm.
Drag lets me take that off. Drag lets me put different things on. And when I'm in drag, I can be an alien. I can be a monster. I can be gorgeous. I can be repulsive. In drag, I can be anything versus right now, there's three things I can be.
And that can be used against you at any time.
Yep.
Ugh. Yeah. I would offer an apology, but I know that is a drop in the bucket.
But also, like, you know me, we're friends.
Yeah.
And so I think on a real personal level, it means listening to Indigenous people. That's like step one. Just like, don't speak, just listen. What are Indigenous people saying? There's a lot of every time, and I think it's no matter which small town you go to. I think this is pretty universal across Ontario and Canada. Whenever there's Indigenous people in the news, don't look at the comment section because there's always somebody who needs to speak, but
yeah.
It's time to listen.
Yeah, that's true of a lot of issues I feel passionately about whenever they're reported on in the news. I'm just like, I gotta resist the comment section. And sometimes I don't. Sometimes I fall down that rabbit hole and I get really angry. But that's why I'm doing this podcast is, I mean, I know that I don't have a massive reach, but if I can at least educate a few minds, then I will be happy with that.
I mean, that's the goal, right? This is also something that I think is a lot bigger than you or me, because once we have these voices out there saying what we're going to say, people can take that. They can consume it. They can accept it. They can reject it. This is now a story in somebody's life that can animate or not. They get to choose to take this with them or not. And what a wonderful choice.
I quite agree.
Some of us don't get that choice.
No, No, indeed. So, on that heavy note.
Out of the depressing stuff, remember when I was hilarious? Let's go back to that.
Well, what I actually wanted to ask you, because we are coming close to the end of our time on Zoom here, I would like you to plug anything that you're working on creatively right now, whether it's your drag, your photography, any of your other visual art.
Oh, nothing. I'm doing nothing right now. I've been actually really desperately trying to create content in the pandemic, and I have been hitting my head against a wall every time.
I think a lot of creatives are feeling the same way. So at the very least, you can take some solace in the fact that you are not alone in that. I mean, I was telling myself I was going to release an episode per month. I started this in March and I'm on episode 6. So to give you an idea.
I have no idea how calendars work, so it sounds great.
Yeah, it was definitely a bit of a lag for a couple of months there. But in my defense, I was leaving a career, moving to a new town for the third time in as many years. And yeah, that's all covered in episode 5, if you want to go back and listen.
I have Facebook, so I just get the versions as they happen.
Right. But if someone were to want to peruse your drag, for instance, you do have Instagram. So maybe
I have Instagram. Yeah. So I am doing some small works here and there. I am trying to keep myself busy in the pandemic and make, because that's the thing I love to do. So if you want to find my drag, you can find me on Instagram at Jennifer DeFuck. That's JennifrDaFuque. It's a weird way to spell fuck.
DeFuque.
DeFuque. And if you want to follow my non-drag, because I also have an Instagram for my fine art, you can just follow Vi Jones, V-I-E-J-O-N-E-S, art, A-R-T. All of that is one word. Oh, God. Oh,
Vi God, Jones art.
Vi Jones art. Follow me!
Please.
I'm not getting anxious about it. No.
They need the engagement.
Yeah, talk to me. I'm desperate for attention. I need somebody to tell me I'm pretty. And if you tip me, I will talk to you back.
Excellent. And after this episode, I'm going to have a link on Facebook and on my link tree on my Instagram page, because you mentioned a paper earlier in the episode. I've already forgotten the name of it.
Decolonization is not a metaphor. I'll send
That's
it to
the
you.
One. Thank you. So anyone who's listening, you'll be able to find that on the Out of Context pages after, depending where you like to follow me. And if you don't follow me, I invite you to. Those obviously will be provided at the end as well. And more than anything, I want to thank Vi for being such a lovely guest today. And it was so nice to see your face. It's so nice to see anyone's face right now.
I mean,
but especially yours.
I've just missed you so much.
Oh, I know. When I hopped on that live stream when you were on Instagram the other day, I was just like, oh, I didn't realize just how much I missed hearing your voice and just like seeing you be.
Just be gay together.
Yeah, be super gay. It's my favorite. I mean, we're both like mooning at each other now. It's a good thing you can't see. It's pretty gross.
Yeah. Like, I feel like a lot of our social needs aren't being met in the pandemic, so we just need to be gentle with each other.
Boy, howdy. Gayer. Yeah.
Be gayer in your life and you'll feel better about it.
I am both a very social and a very gay person, so this pandemic has taken a double toll on me.
Oh, I remember for the first like 4 months, I was living my best life. And then I was told, you still can't go outside. And I'm like, but I'm done.
I've had enough now. Thank you.
I'm good. Thank you. I'm ready.
Let's move on to the next phase.
And then for like a week, I get sad that I can't go outside. And then I go, oh yeah, I hate outside. And I remember.
I mean, it's definitely been
a good excuse for any social engagements that you don't want to be at. You can just be like, oh, sorry, it's not safe.
Also, digital drag is my favorite drag. The fact that I only have to get dressed up from the waist up and my cats are with me and I can go to bed at a reasonable hour, bless.
I'm glad you brought that up because I am currently dressed from the waist up myself as we are speaking.
I saw your pajamas. I thought they were cute.
Thank you.
They were plaid.
Well, as if they'd be anything
else on me.
I was assuming they were either plaid or pizza.
Oh, I have something heartbreaking to tell you
about my pizza boxers.
You didn't get them framed?
Not yet. Maybe like a
shadow box kind of idea is what I can do with those.
Yeah.
No, they wore a hole like right by the waistband.
Oh, they needed to though.
Yeah, I mean,
wearing them pretty much weekly for an entire year.
Yeah.
Yeah. And considering they were from Walmart,
like that's pretty good usage. And I even wore them here, well, Fort Francis, because that's where I've done drag. I haven't done drag in Dryden yet, hoping to.
Oh, you're in Dryden now?
Yes, I moved here in August. So, yeah, but I just wanted to let you know that they are likely retired now.
Excellent. Well, you know where I live. I'll take them.
I might wash them first. We'll see.
I like them better if they're not.
And for more on Vi's kinks, tune in to episode 7.
Kink shaming is my kink. Kink shaming is my kink.
Oh, you are such a complex human being. I love you.
I love you.
On that note, that was Vi Jones. We have been speaking about decolonization and applying it in a queer context and also just generally a Canadian context. What's that?
Super lightly.
Just
get into it in an hour.
Just real quick, just brush on the topic. But
send me a message though. I'll talk a storm with you, I promise.
I was going to say, there's
nothing saying I can't have you back for a future episode because this is my show and I do what I want.
Thank you for having me.
You're welcome.
Out of Context with Caitlin Hartland.
Thanks for listening to Queer Core today. We're going to round off the rest of the hour with some music. Let's start with the new one from No Master, No Servant, titled No, 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 No. I hope you all have a great, warm day and are making it through this curfew. Take care.
demand demonstrations from God for our entertainment. And that's what they want. Do you understand they've seen the withered hand stretched out? They've seen a mute man who was blind see and speak. Why did they miss those signs? Because those works were redemptive demonstrations of power.
This shit's black like a stink matter. I got put the blood up on the wall when it didn't matter. This shit's black like a stink matter. I got put the blood up in the water. I did that. This shit's black like a stink matter. I got put the blood up on the wall when it didn't matter. This shit's black like a stink matter. I got put the blood up in the water. I did that. The horse of life I leave and the losses I receive. Every day at night I peek, I see crosses in my sleep, and apostles in my feet, and the monsters in my dreams. But I'm always choose hell, cause it's lost inside of me. Tattoo the 66, I think tabloids the end this. I think I lose my interest, I switch got voodoo in this. They say they choose I'm gifted, I also brutal senseless. I got the spooky spirits, I bring the hoodoo business. And if I'm wrong, then my soul will burn eternal with flame. My vanity, single purpose is strange. Highly stressing humanity, seen the worst of my age. Going to hell was redemption, I went to turn on my grave. This shit's bad like a stink matter. I done put the blood up on the wall when it didn't matter. This shit's bad like a stink matter. I done put the blood up in the water and dip down. This shit's bad like a stink matter. I done put the blood up on the wall. Phantom Gora, a Gomorrah, a city of horror. Mere mortals, mutilated corpses and torture. The scent of death, decay, and flesh was destined by the corporeal. Endless form of pyramids made in memoriam. The sigils artificial, Polaris and heresy. The seers lack sight in the blackest dark they can never see. In search of stigmata, the cosmic egg and the alchemy. Only found abyss, the jaws of beasts, the blasphemy. In search of Elohim, outside of the Christianity. Fears that grow in faith of Satan, the serpentine. The pride of false prophets, the Pharisees of uncertainty. Behind the infinite, the singular in insanity.
The mystery that is Babylon, heart is fled. Charlotte's where widows that fed on man with a vase of red of a thousand dead. Lilith up in the parish, it's vicious. Only blackness, wickedness of the masses is pity as if immaculate.
It's bad like a stink matter. I just put the blood up on the wall when it didn't matter. This shit's bad like a stink matter. I just put the blood up in the water and dip down. This shit's bad like a stink matter. I just put the blood up on the wall when it didn't matter. This shit's bad like a stink matter. I just put the blood up in the water and dip down.
There's a peacefulness as I sleep on this. When I wake up with my makeup and my cheeks so messed, the nightmares seem tame compared to the peeps I've
met. And the jump scares don't play. Fresh shit is real, I guess. I sleep forever, it might be forever. Drink a hex, my mind don't even wake up. Sleeping beauty had me figured out. From the witch's fever, I'ma see you later. Night grill has the right feel, but I think it's better when it's missing ambient. Sleeping grimace, I don't think I'm finished. Blissful wishing up in every minute. So ergonomic, Mr. Bell won't leave me alone. I bought an exit baggage just in case of panic. See no errors in keeping it close. I think it's hellish, I need to go on. I see no merit in living this bone. Hit the casket, I am finger blasted by the skeletons deep in my tomb. The reaper silence, as he sees my anguish is so relevant to my undoom. And the elephant in this whole room is, do I regret it? I wouldn't have accepted if Christ would save me in this last song.
Sound waves in the air.
CKUT.
Montreal, Canada. CKUT.
Ce message s'adresse à l'ensemble de la nation québécoise. Nous devons agir avec force pour freiner la pandémie. Seuls les services essentiels demeurent offerts. Les rassemblements sont interdits. Il est défendu de quitter son domicile entre 20h et 5h le matin. Respectons le confinement et le couvre-feu pour éviter d'être infectés par le virus de la COVID-19. Pour protéger les travailleurs de la santé, nos proches et nos aînés. Car l'important, c'est la santé. Pour plus d'informations, visitez québec.ca/confinement. Un message du gouvernement du Québec.
Si vous avez présenté une demande d'indemnisation pour des sévices subis dans un pensionnat indien, sachez que les dossiers de votre demande sont protégés. Ils seront détruits en septembre 2027, à moins que vous ne choisissiez de les conserver ou de les partager. Pour en savoir davantage, composez le numéro sans frais 1-877-635-2648 ou consultez le site mesdocumentsmonchoix.ca.
Vous écoutez Les Beaux Sons avec Nathalie Di Palma